Be the leader that defines the way. Find yourself and others with strategic change. This is The Path to Success. Broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Growth Matters.
Well, good morning. We're here for another edition of Growth Matters. And today we're going to be talking about something that at some point in their life, everybody has had the experience, Kevin. We are going to be talking with Dr. Bernie Dunson, who's the owner of Dunson Dental Design. And they provide a wide range of dental services, including cosmetic dentistry, dental implants, and sedation dentistry. And they really are focused on sort of leading the way with innovation in dentistry, which, you know, as I said, Kevin, everybody has to deal with this, but it's not something that you sort of really think about the profession and kind of what's going on in it. So we're going to learn a lot today.
Well, I don't know if you know, my two front teeth are fake. Got knocked out when I was a kid in a fight, so I've had to deal with a lot of different dentists and have these put in, so I know a lot about that.
Okay, well, you're going to learn even more. So, Dr. Dunson, if I can call you Bernie, it's so good to have you here.
It's great to be here. Yeah. It's a wonderful opportunity to join you guys this morning.
So let's just start. Tell us a little bit of your background, kind of where you grew up, how you I like to call it the nickel tour of you, and then we'll get into sort of the growth path for Dunson Dental.
Sure. I was born and I was raised in Albany, Georgia.
Albany?
Albany, which is about 200 miles southwest of Atlanta. I went to college in Atlanta here at Morehouse College. And then upon completion of Morehouse, I went to the West Coast, to Los Angeles, to the University of Southern California to go to dental school. And then from there, I left Los Angeles and went to New York and did a residency at Columbia University. And spent a year there, and then I actually essentially returned to California, Southern California, did a three-year residency in implant dentistry at Loma Linda University.
All right. So, you know, I have to ask, I don't know, Bernie, if you're aware, and Kevin, I think I've mentioned it a couple times, my father was a dentist, so this whole industry is sort of near and dear to my heart. So I'm just curious, did you always want to be a dentist? What was it that let you know this was sort of what you wanted to pursue for your career? And as I talked to you in the green room, your passion.
Yes, dentistry is my passion. And I would share with you that my desire to become a dentist really took its origins with my experiences having braces. I wore braces for 2 years, a month, a day, and 3.5 hours. I can give you the specific dates, but and while wearing the braces wasn't the most pleasant experience, my orthodontist was a phenomenal and very inspirational guy to me, and his personality and his approach to his craft kind of sparked my interest and said, that should be something I should pursue. So that's kind of where, and I was 13 at the time.
Wow. That's great. I don't know that I've heard anybody that's had that experience from wearing braces. So talk to me a little bit about Dunson Dental Design. First, how'd you come up with the name? That's kind of a different name for a dental practice.
It is. I have to give credit to my wife. My wife has an MBA in marketing, and she kind of coined that name. But basically, I think she came to that name based on how I talk about what I do and my craft and the fact that I think I engineer smiles. I think of myself as a smile architect. Dentistry is science and it's art, and it's also business. But I always have embraced the science and the art of business. And so the name of designing smiles that last a long time, function well, and look great kind of tied into the Dunson Dental Design concept.
Kevin, I love that because as we have people each Friday come here and talk about their business, a lot of times, you know, people say, oh, I'm a dentist, but to kind of turn it around talk about the value proposition is kind of a different way to think about that.
And definitely and all the passion, too, that exudes from these people that do these great things.
Yeah. So where is your practice? And tell us kind of a little bit about how big it is. You know, in terms of staff and the type of patients that you see?
My office is located strategically in the middle of the city of Atlanta, and it's in at 1100 Peachtree. It's at, on 12th at 12th and Peachtree. Number of team members that I have, six, and we're looking to expand because of some future things that we are now embarking on that are going to make our practice even better. How I came about the style of my practice, who I treat, who I get the opportunity, or shall I say blessed to treat. I like to think of my team as ladies and gentlemen, treating ladies and gentlemen, preferably adult ladies and gentlemen.
Love that.
My particular craft and passion in dentistry is reconstruction, where we create smiles, and foundationally where you're challenged or compromised or you've lost a foundation, implant dentistry is the core foundation by which we do our craft. And from that reason, I ventured away from treating children. It's not that I don't love children. It's just that my particular expertise is away from the pediatric dental realm.
Yeah, so I'm not sure, again, as I was talking to you prepping for the show, that you really, when you come into a dental practice, think about sort of what it took to get there in terms of, from a business perspective, you're kind of always thinking of it, or at least I am, from the medical aspect of things. So how did you start the practice and, identify patients and be able to grow?
Well, initially, after finishing my second residency, I actually purchased a practice. I've been in practice 18 years this October, and at the time when I was seeking to go out on my own and have my own private practice and start to develop, or shall I say, exercise or put in place my vision and my dream, the appropriate strategy from a business perspective was to purchase a practice. So I purchased a practice, and the intent there was to take a practice that was viable, that was successful, and then transform it into your vision of what you wanted a dental practice to be. And for the first 10 years, I was located in Stone Mountain, and it worked great. I had a tremendous experience for 10 years in Stone Mountain treating that population, but my challenge was I was having patients come from all over the city, and so what I elected to do, because I live in town, was move my practice in town. Now I'm blessed to suggest to you that I see patients from all over the country, even from as far as England, that come to my practice. So that's a that's a tremendous blessing.
How do you mark? I mean, is that just serendipitous? They were living here, or how do you have practice from outside of the U.S.?
Practice from outside of the U.S. and then other parts of the U.S. is based on skill set, really associated with my training and my background and what I'm able to offer for patients that they may not necessarily get in their locale. So, and I guess the internet's a great marketing tool, and people can go out online and find out different things about you. And then
definitely,
it's interesting that they will travel distances to see you.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's got to feel good when people are like saying, well, we're going to choose you. We're going to travel across the pond and come to you. And it's also got to be really satisfying, because you're really transforming these people. These people probably come back to you and they're ecstatic because their appearance is so important to them. And just having being able to smile in pictures and look at themselves in the mirror is a huge confidence booster for them.
Most definitely. That's the part of dentistry that gives me the greatest fulfillment, having the opportunity. I say we as dentists address not only a patient's biologic health. When we talk about biologic health, mm-hmm. we think about periodontal disease. We think about decay, cavities, things of that nature. We also think of functional health. Functional health being, you know, how I chew my food, or lacking teeth so I can't chew my food adequately, or I'm wearing an appliance, a removable appliance, a partial or denture that doesn't allow me to do that effectively. But then there's that component of dentistry that for me is greatest in terms of fulfillment, which is the emotional health of a patient, which is what you just spoke of, Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
Where if I change a person's smile, I improve their self-image, I improve their confidence in how they face their public.
And that leads to so many other things in their life. That confidence can lead to a new job, a new relationship, and it really just helps these people out.
That is exactly true.
Yeah. So I'm curious, when you... It's evident the passion that you have for your craft. When you started and as you continued to be an entrepreneur, you know, kind of what surprised you about sort of having a dental practice and the business of dentistry versus the craft of what you do?
Great question, Michelle, because dentistry is science, it is art, and it is definitely business. Anybody who's an entrepreneur who owns a small business runs into challenges. And you know, it's not without its challenges for us at Dunson Dental Design. The challenges are just, you know, surrounding yourself with the right team that embrace your vision and support you in the process. I mean, we're in the people business, so as a person who provides a service to people, you have to avail yourself and you have to be accommodating, if you will. And dentistry, you, as all of us know, has this stigma of a lot of anxiety. So the challenges that I'm faced with is surrounding myself with the right team that embrace my vision and allow us to provide a service that exceeds the expectations of patients. Mm-hmm. Other challenges are the technology. I mean, technology is great. We embrace technology. We have a practice that takes advantage of the technology that's available that makes it better for me to provide service to my patients. But I would share with you that it comes at a great expense. And so from a business standpoint, just managing to be current with technology, yet at the same time be viable so that you can be there next week, next month, is a critical component that you have to have a certain acumen to be able to meet those challenges. And then the industry is going through some changes relative to corporate entities entering into our sphere, as well as how we look at what we call insurance in dentistry and how it reimburses the practitioner to be able to provide the craft.
So just for a couple of moments, let's veer on to sort of the business of
sure.
dentistry, not necessarily just your business, but the business as a whole. And you mentioned that corporate entities are coming in to play. I think, you know, when I think of dentists, I always think of a dentist or a dental practice. I don't know that I've ever thought of it from a corporate perspective. So can you tell us a little bit about sort of how that impacts you and maybe what are some of the factors that have others coming into what has probably most likely been a smaller business kind of industry?
Great question. I say, or I have been saying for a few years, dentistry is under assault as a private practice business. And I think that is in large part due to corporate entities entering into the field of dentistry. And you say, well, tell me more. If we think back years ago when we had a pharmacist who was a neighborhood pharmacist who addressed the concerns and the cares of the medications that you took, years ago that kind of went away when you had the large outfits like Walmart, CVS, Publix now has pharmacy, and it took away that personal touch that comes with a healthcare practitioner, and the same is happening now in dentistry. And so on one end you say there's a lot more availability, but on the other end I think at the end of the day you lose the care that comes with the practitioner who is truly concerned about your dental health and longevity.
Are there factors related to just dentists coming out of dental school that is also playing into this dynamic?
Sure. When I referenced that comment I made about the perfect storm, you have corporate coming in, but corporate dentistry having an advantage in that a lot of dentists, new graduates coming out of dental school, are saddled with a large amount of student loan debt. At this point, the quoted number that I hear a lot of times is $300,000.
Wow.
So if you think about if I come out of dental school and I might have undergraduate debt as well, but I've got $300,000 worth of debt, then I am not a person that a bank will consider to either purchase a practice that's existing or start a new practice. And so as a result, what happens in that cycle is that individual comes out, takes a position with one of these corporate entities, and they get a salary. And now while they don't have the same autonomy, they practice dentistry in a setting that is largely dictated by numbers. And what happens if they're doing that for a period of time? Life happens. They get married. They have children. They get a house. And so the cycle carries itself further to the point where going into private practice is not necessarily the most viable alternative for him.
Yeah. So, Kevin, I don't know where I've seen the statistic, but, you know, going to your dentist in terms of fear for people sometimes is right up there with, you know, public speaking and some of those other things. So what is some of, you know, sort of the misconceptions that maybe people that don't go to the dentist regularly or have that fear, you know, what are some things that you could tell them to dissuade them from feeling like, that's not something I want to do, even though I should?
Well, I can tell you that a lot of that fear is grounded in history. It's grounded in the perceptions of what took place historically years ago. And I would share with the public that dentistry as a profession has advanced tremendously. What we're able to do in dentistry from the standpoint of addressing pain in terms of giving local anesthetic, giving anesthesia atraumatically is really something that we can do predictably day in and day out. And so some of the historical perceptions of pain associated with dentistry really aren't current. The other thing is associated with the fact that prevention is the key. And unfortunately, some of us wait when we have a small toothache, we have some cold sensitivity, or if our gums bleed when we floss, and we ignore those symptoms. And by the time we go and have them addressed, it's more of a concern. And so the experience in the dental office at that point is truly associated with the reactivity or the delayed association with treating the symptom versus being proactive and staying in a preventive mode and not ever experiencing any of these adverse effects associated with dental health.
Yes. Wow. So many of our listeners probably, you know, have heard tips from their dentist that says, here's things that you should do if you want to have that great smile and to have longevity of your teeth. If I were to ask you kind of, in a nutshell, kind of five key things for our listeners to think about, and some of them may be reminders, to help us have good dental health, what would you say those sort of five things are for us to remember?
Five things. One, you want to brush. You want to brush your teeth, and there's a certain way you brush your teeth that's effective, and any health care provider in dentistry can offer that instruction to you. You should probably brush your teeth 3 to 4 times a day. Flossing is imperative. There is a lot of research that will suggest that if we floss, we increase our life expectancy 7 years.
Why is that?
Because flossing is effective at addressing debris, plaque, we call it, in between your teeth. We'll say the hard to reach places that we can't access with brushing. And if I floss effectively, I essentially decrease inflammation and disease and infection. And if I have disease and infection in my mouth and it's in my bloodstream, we all can respect the fact that it swims through our heart. Mm. And so there's a lot of correlation between periodontal concerns or gingivitis with heart health and, for that matter, overall systemic health. There are a lot of studies that support that truth and reality. So flossing is key, okay?
So brush, floss.
Brush, floss, okay. And diet's always important. Be mindful of your diet. You know, good nutrition, that's a subject for the nutritionist to share, but the reality is good nutrition is going to be not only good for your overall health, but more specifically for your dental health. So that's number three. Probably a good idea to stay away from certain things in terms of using your teeth for, like chewing on ice, chewing on hard candies, things of that nature, because teeth can become brittle and fracture and so forth, so on. And then if you have a parafunctional habit, which a lot of us do.
Parafunctional habit, what's that?
Good question. I grind my teeth at night because I'm stressed. I clench my teeth because I'm stressed. A large percentage of the population has a bad habit of clenching or grinding their teeth, and they ignore it for the most part. And the reality is if that fits your makeup as it relates to how you manage some of your stress, then it's important for you to have an appliance to protect you from doing damage not only to your teeth but also to your temporal mandibular joint, which is your jaw joint, and the muscles, like the muscles around your head, which maybe the patient who does this says, you know, I wake up with headaches all the time. Mm. So that's another one. In terms of, and if I could give one that's emotional.
Definitely.
Just keep smiling.
Hmm. You know, yesterday I was in Whole Foods and I was getting my groceries. I was at the cashier and the cashier said, she was talking to somebody else and she called her over and she said the reason was because she just wanted to drink in her smile. And I love that as a, just a thought, to drink in other people's smile. So you really are helping me to want to smile, and then that in turn can make other people happy because they can drink my smile in as
that's
well.
That's right. That's yeah. right. Yeah, yeah, drinking in a smile is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
They say smiling actually even lowers blood pressure.
Yes. That can extend your life a few years as well, I guarantee
yeah,
it.
Exactly so. True. Yeah. yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about you, the businessman, and the the dentist. So what's your biggest challenge as a leader? You talked to us a little bit about some of the challenges of right people and keeping up with technology, but as you think of yourself as that entrepreneur and leader, you know, what challenges you? What keeps you up at night?
Oh, I've got a lot of challenges in that regard. Not only do I have a dental practice, but I also have a teaching institute. So some of the things that keep me up is preparing for my lectures so I can stand in front of my colleagues with confidence and present to them in a manner that I can hopefully impact their practice, whether it be here or whether it be when I'm abroad teaching. So that becomes one of the things that keeps me up at night.
So pause there and tell us a little bit more about that. I guess I also don't think about dentists as being educators. I think of, you know, universities and colleges and that kind of thing. So how'd you get into having an institute, and kind of tell us a little bit about that?
Well, one of the philosophies, both my parents were educators. So I guess I kind of got that gene, and they are my heroes, and they inspired me to be a teacher as well. I think teaching affords me the opportunity to be better at my craft so that I can take better care of the people I get the opportunity to serve. And it's kind of my exercise. It's like me staying in shape. And my reality is, if I am positioning myself to teach other dentists how to do this craft, at the end of the day, I'm sharpening my saw, if I can borrow a Stephen Covey phrase, that allows me to take care of the people I get to serve. I also had an ambitious goal of being able to impact dentistry throughout the world, and this is my avenue by which I can do that. Meaning, if I learn a craft or if I develop a process that makes what we do, that facilitates the process, then I share it with colleagues, and then at the end of the day, when they're taking care of the people they serve, they get to do it as well. So that's kind of that avenue. I've been blessed to be able to travel the world and at this point in my career and share that information. I look forward to doing it for many years to come.
Wow.
Yeah. So I took you a little bit down a detour. So the institute and being able to teach, that is kind of one of the things that strengthens you as a leader. And we were talking a little bit about the other things that sort of challenge you so that you can not only be a great dentist, but a great businessman.
Right. I have a partner in business now that I did not have before. When I say a partner, I say I've actually joined an organization called SmileSource. And SmileSource is an organization that is geared directly towards improving and empowering independent dentistry. Why I mention them here is because a lot of the things that they do, and I serve as one of the co-leaders of the group in Atlanta, when you mention the term leader, where we share business industry issues, whether it be from the appropriate way to hire an individual, from policy manuals to contracts to relationships with our systems and our practice. That empowers me, and it gives me an opportunity to serve as a leader in that capacity as well. But the good thing about SmileSource is it's helping us to offset what's happening in the industry relative to corporate dentistry.
Okay, so it allows you to keep your independence, but to be able to get some of the benefits and the economies of scale by partnering with other dentist in the Atlanta area, SMART.
Exactly. Actually, it's an organization that's based throughout the country, but I happen to be a leader in the role here in Atlanta.
So you, through our conversation, are certainly demonstrating that you, sort of the business part of things, and haven't so much talked about what is your specialty. What is it that people come to you and only you to help them specifically brighten and get their smile up to be better?
If I define my practice is probably best described as a comprehensive dental practice with a focus on cosmetic or aesthetic dentistry, implant reconstruction, and my training to be able to provide those particular crafts in dentistry. I do sedation, so I can do what they call sedation dentistry, which allows me the opportunity to do extended procedures where I can completely rehabilitate a person's mouth while they're asleep with no obvious concern for pain or even care about what I'm doing because they're sleeping safely. My thoughts are I help people. My goal or my mission is to create functional smiles that look great, work well, last a long time. And in order to do that, you have to respect all systems in dentistry. Otherwise, you can build something really nice and it'll fail in a short period of time.
So talk to me a little bit about technology is in everybody's business. And again, I think sometimes when you hear the word technology, people think computers and laptops and smartphones and those kinds of things. But there's a whole sort of array of technology, I would imagine,
sure,
that is focused in your industry. So, you know, how do you use technology and how do you decide sort of when it's time to bring in?
I like to take an approach where I say that Dunson Dental Design is on the leading edge of dentistry. And I emphasize leading edge versus suggesting that I'm on the cutting edge. And what I typically do from that vantage point is I allow institutions to test new technologies for at least a couple of years before I say it is appropriate for me to implement it into my practice. With that said, when you ask the question about what's new, what's really changed dentistry, I would share with you that, first of all, one of the more important things that you have to do as a dentist is be a good diagnostician. And to that end, one of the greatest tools that we've had that's now in dental practices is a cone beam CT scanner, which is essentially saying, instead of looking at a digital radiographic image that's two dimensions, we can look at it three dimensions. Hmm. So I can actually take a virtual tour through your mouth. So anything that is pathologic, abnormal, I get to visualize it on a major scale. And not only I can see it, I like to do a co-discovery with my patients. They get to see it. You know, they can visually see it. And you talk about computers. Computers give us the communication tool for patients to see this on a large screen TV.
Well, I think you brought up, but we talked about it earlier, how the patient experience actually has become a lot easier in dental offices. And I think it's because of this kind of technology. Great example is, I remember they used to do x-rays. It used to be really painful. It was like a huge thing you had to put in your mouth, and I would dread it all the time. Now it's really easy. They put a small thing in there, takes 5 seconds per x-ray, and then you get to see it right there up on the screen, too.
Exactly. Yeah, that's really helped a lot.
Is it also helping educate your patients more? Because you can really show them what's there, what's going on, so it's just not all jargon to them. You're like, hey, this is what you're doing wrong, this is the effect it's having, and this could be the long-term effect.
Yeah, dentistry is a partnership, Kevin, and it's very important for patients to understand. The best partners in dentistry are the patients who understand what's happening and how they can help maintain the health long-term associated with it. With them being able to visualize these concerns, then they kind of, for lack of a better word, they kind of join the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has made dentistry a lot better for us in that regard.
All right.
And then lasers. I mean, think about it from the perspective of a laser different when I do surgery, having the ability to use a laser versus use a scalpel blade in certain instances. The healing capacity of a person secondary to having a laser is manyfold better from the standpoint of healing and in invasion, that kind of thing. Lasers are great technology for us. We have a lot of other units. We have a technology we call CAD CAM, which is suggesting that not only can I have a crown made by, you know how we take impressions, we put this material in your mouth?
Yeah.
What about the technology that we have available to us now where we can put a camera in your mouth, and instead of taking a material impression, we take a digital impression?
You don't have to have that nasty slime stuff like it's going down your throat. I mean, we all know about it, especially if you have braces.
Chalky, all of that.
Yeah.
See, that's huge right there.
And then with the internet, and say you want to use a lab in California, well, you'd have to use snail mail and send it to California. But now you can just hit send, and the lab technician can confirm that he has the image and he's in the process of fabricating the restoration to your specifications right now as we speak before the patient even leaves the practice. Wow. Not only that, we can do it in the office. There are certain cases that we do where we have a device that mills porcelain and we deliver beautifully aesthetic restorations that function well right in the office within a matter of about 30, 45 minutes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like I said, hopefully our listeners are feeling sort of like I'm feeling, which is this thing that I do twice a year that, you know, I'm off to the dentist, and of course everybody then says, oh, I've had this experience. You are really showing us the back end of what's happening beyond us in the chair that really is, you know, quite, I would imagine at times, revolutionary from when you even started
Most
the practice.
Definitely.
My father probably would not even...
Oh, your dad would love coming.
He wouldn't recognize any of it. But, you know, when you speak of that whole idea of science, art, and business, you kind of gave me a different way even to think about my father in practice. He almost was going to be an architect. Mm-hmm. And so he was very good at drawing. He was very good at art. So it never for me kind of clicked as to how did that side of him come out. And you're sort of sharing that it's all about if you try to envision something different from your patients and kind of partner with them so that they have a look and a feel that's better. I can see how that would tap into the art part of what I know about him.
Yeah, so. And the look and the feel that your dad was able to provide tremendously impacted a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
And that's what we as dentists are afforded the opportunity to do.
Yeah, so Kevin, did you know that this month is Oral Cancer Awareness Month?
I did not, but it's perfect timing.
It's perfect timing. So here we are in April, and so Bernie, I want you to talk to us a little bit about that. I got a couple of statistics that I thought was kind of interesting and maybe increases sort of the, I wouldn't say urgency, but the importance of understanding this particular cancer. So every 60 minutes, a person dies from oral cancer. And 40% of those diagnosed with oral cancer will not survive for more than about 5 years. And This statistic I thought was really interesting. 3 times more people die from oral cancer than cervical cancer in the United States. And so I certainly hear about that, particularly with the HPV vaccine. You're hearing a lot more about it. So talk to us a little bit about oral cancer and help educate us to some of the challenges and things we can do to keep away from that.
Sure. Well, let's just say April is... The profession of dentistry is bringing about awareness to oral cancer. I think it's appropriate. I think it's wonderful, and I think it's very significant that we do this. Oral cancer is on the rise, and we always see the pink ribbons, and we see the light blue ribbons, and we know the pink ribbons represent breast cancer, and the light blue ribbon represents prostate cancer, and they have their months, October and September, respectively. But the ribbon we have is a red and white ribbon. And so if you see that ribbon this month, that's what the profession of dentistry is trying to bring awareness to, which is oral cancer. And if all the other cancers are decreasing because of the significance of awareness and research and science that's supporting that, we are a little behind, but we want to raise our level of play and make sure that we address bringing awareness to what causes oral cancer and ways to prevent oral cancer. And obviously, anytime you talk about cancer, early detection is key.
So before you continue to share a little bit about you know, some ways in which we can address that and the meaning of it. You said we're a little behind. So should I take that to mean that it's on the rise?
It is on the rise. And when I say we, I'm saying we as a profession haven't been really forthright with getting the word out about oral cancer, at least not visually like you see the other previous cancers I mentioned. And if it's on the rise, we need to be in the forefront relative to making sure that the public is aware of the risk associated with certain behaviors and certain, like smokers. Tobacco use, whether it be a non-smoking tobacco or a smoking tobacco, obviously that person's at greater risk of cancer.
I'm just curious, the sort of causes of or certain things that can contribute to oral cancer. So you mentioned tobacco, but, you know, in my mind, I mean, I could have this incorrect, you know, smoking is actually going down or has been. So if that's a key contributor, what are some of the other factors that are contributing to it being on the increase?
Well, high use of alcohol can create some concerns associated with oral cancer. Sex, particularly oral sex, and oral sex is linked largely to the HPV virus. And while there is that vaccine, that we don't know the studies in terms of how that vaccine affects or impacts oral cancer as of yet. It's not to say that it won't, but we probably about 10 years out before we can determine statistically that this is also minimizing the chances for oral cancer. Age plays a factor. I mean, we just get older and we have changes in our cell abnormality.
That age DNA thing, it genetics. Just is always something. It's always something.
Yeah, and I would probably share with you when we talk about age, when you talk about stress, I think that's a study that's yet to be done in terms of depth and how stress affects all of the different systems of the body and how cells turn over, this kind of thing.
Yeah, so I'm curious, again, for our listeners, so since this is something that's on the rise, is this something like when I go for my annual exam, there's certain tests that they do on a regular basis. Is this the same practice within dentistry, and it's just something that happens and I'm not even aware of it, or is that just now evolving?
I think it's evolving. I think you would suggest that every time you went and saw the dentist that you had that moment where the dentist did an oral cancer screening, and it was a visual screening without any necessary tools like technology to support that process. In our practice, we actually take a twofold approach to the process because it is such a serious issue. We actually use a molecular test, which is kind of a DNA test, kind of a cellular test, in that process called MOP, M-O-P. Basically what we do is they have you swish with a rinse, a medicated minty rinse, which is a good thing, and then you expirate or you spit this back into a cup, and we send it to a lab, and they evaluate it much like a pap smear would be evaluated. And essentially in that, to simplify the discussion, they evaluate three different things. They evaluate cell abnormalities. So they're looking to see if there's anything different in terms of the cellular makeup of the individual. And they also screen for the HPV virus, which we hear a lot of now associated with oral sex. And then also they look at a DNA in terms of changes in DNA, which may suggest that you have precancerous a tendency towards precancerous cells, and as a result, you should be screened on a more regular basis. So that's one test. That's the MOP test. That's the swish and spit into the cup, and we'll evaluate that. Then the second test, which I think is important also, is a visual test with a fluorescent light that allows you to visualize looking in the mouth with a light under fluorescence to see if there are any changes in the way the oral cavity presents itself. Anything that presents itself that's abnormal is obviously looked at and evaluated at a deeper level. I think the combination gives us not only the opportunity to identify if you are have a precancerous or a cancerous condition, but it also gives us an opportunity to see exactly where it is. So that's why in our practice I like to employ both. Now, whether or not practices are using this science or not, we do at my practice at Dunson Dental Design. And I would hope that, and I'm sure I have a lot of colleagues that are using something similar.
Yeah, so what that says to me when I go to my dentist is sort of just being a knowledgeable consumer, so to speak, or a knowledgeable patient, and asking the question, how does that practice test and make sure that those kinds of things are not happening in my mouth, and that I can. Are there other things that we as the owners of the teeth can do to? Is it primarily in our behavior and not doing certain things, or are there other things that contribute to us being healthy from that perspective?
Behavior is a big one. Social habits as it relates to smoking, drinking, this kind of thing, alcohol intake. But genetic predisposition is one of those things that we're just born with. I mean, our families bless us with a lot of things, and unfortunately, you know, there may be a genetic predisposition to something that might create, or shall I say, there's no known cause for why this individual, except for, you know, his grandfather had or his great-grandfather had it. So the way to approach that is to make sure that you have routine dental visits. You should see your dentist twice a year, and at least annually you should be evaluated to this level with this technology to minimize any chance for this kind of condition creating a concern for you. Because, again, prevention is the key. Early detection is the key. So if you have the benefit of taking the due diligent habit of going to see your dentist twice a year, chances for you are great relative to this being a real concern. And some of those statistics that you mentioned won't be your reality because you will have been evaluated early.
Yeah, so talk to us a little bit about if you were to come back here and sit in this chair, 12 to 36 months from now, tell us a little bit about how you're growing your practice and, you know, what's on the horizon to make it even more stellar.
We've got a lot of things on the horizon. I always hire a business coach, and so I just hired a new one. And
so talk to our listeners, what is a business coach for maybe some that aren't familiar?
I think as an entrepreneur of any field, you should embrace somebody who is an expert and a specialist at maybe improving your craft from a business standpoint. So my practice, and I say my practice because when I hire a business coach, they don't just coach me, they coach my team as well as myself. And I just hired a business coach, and I'm excited about it because, I try to read a lot of books, and I read industry-associated books. And this particular individual, Dr. McAnally, has written a couple of books that speak volumes to the kind of practice that I aspire to achieve, kind of that happiness-centered business. And from this experience, I think what we're going to be able to do is really target a larger population who may not be aware of what we can do in dentistry. I think that's important to share to Kevin and Michelle. Mm-hmm. There is a large population that does not know what can be done in dentistry and how their lives can be dramatically improved because of these advances in technology that we've just spoke of. And my intent through this process is to be able to craft a process where I can bring that to the public and then invite them into public seminars where I share the possibilities. And then if it avails itself, the opportunity to take care of them and dramatically change their lives.
Wow. Okay. So that says that there'll be more opportunities for you to be an educator, but
sure.
Now more on the patient side.
The consumer public awareness side.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so do you have growth goals or do you have a perspective of how you see your practice evolving?
Growth goals for me with my time is the commodity that we can't make. I see myself bringing on other doctors to be a part of my practice and hopefully share a philosophy that will allow for me to expand who we are and what we do so that we can reach greater individuals from that perspective.
Yeah, so today you are the primary dentist in your practice. How do you balance all these things that you've been talking to Kevin and listeners about growing and teaching and doing? How do you balance that and the actual work of your craft with your patients? It feels like that would be a little overwhelming sometimes.
The intent of how I approach what I do is as I like to think of it, Michelle, is a synergy. Meaning teaching makes me better for taking care of patients. So I see that as direct correlation. as it relates to the teaching and the travel, I try to involve myself in the things that really are centered around making me a better practitioner. And at the end of the day, the end user, the patient, gets the benefit from that. So the fact that I'm passionate about teaching, the fact that I'm passionate about dentistry, really helps my patients. A lot of my patients actually participate with me in some of my teaching experiences. I do a lot of live surgeries, and I have docs from all over the country and all over the world come into the practice. And so we're able to do procedures for individuals who may not, for lack of a better word, be able to afford it at that level. And we're able to teach, and it's symbiotic from the standpoint it's beneficial to the patient, it's beneficial to the doctors that are learning, and it's beneficial for me to be able to teach it.
Well, education seems to be a really big part of this. Are you guys working on any bigger picture to sort of educate the normal public about all these advances and all the things they need to know about? Because I think a lot of people just think of doctor or dentist, they think of just getting their teeth cleaned, and they don't know about any of these other health issues that they could avoid just by going twice a year for 15, 20 minutes.
Kevin, for the last 2 years, year and a half, I've been doing public seminars.
Okay.
And so my public seminars are truly where I go out into the community, invite the public to come into a setting at a restaurant or and just learn about what dentistry can offer them. Through that process, we get to share the technology that's available. We get to share the concerns associated with the rise in oral cancer, for example. We get to share how wearing a denture is really a thing of the past. It is to chewing your food like the 8-track is to music.
Okay.
That's a visual. That's a visual for you.
And just from the vantage point of the health issues associated with that. I mean, let's just for one moment take the concept of a person wearing a complete denture, an upper denture.
Yeah.
The denture is stabilized for the most part across the person's palate or the roof of their mouth. Well, if I can provide a system and freedom where I can liberate them from wearing a denture by giving them something that's fixed, not only does the obvious happen, I increase their ability to chew their food, but I also liberate their palate where they then have it available to taste the foods that they eat. You know, never have a person, or shall I say, be cautious of a person who wears a denture telling you that the roux associated with the gumbo tastes great, because in essence, the taste buds are covered.
Wow. Okay.
Or what about the glass of wine that they suggest touched their palate in a such a way? It didn't touch their palate. It touched the denture. So
very interesting.
That
I would
freedom,
never
known that. That freedom that a patient has when you can use implants to anchor a prosthesis, a denture that's modified, slenderized, is liberating for them.
Well, definitely, and they forget about it. It's like they have teeth again. They don't have to think, oh, well, I have to put in my denture, I have to do this or that. No, it's, hey, you know what? I have teeth again, and they forget about it, and they can just go on and live their lives without even worrying about it. And after years, they won't even think, well, these are implants. They won't even think about it.
A lot of the patients, once we've done implants, suggest that implants are much like their function much like their natural teeth or much like their natural teeth used to. Let's think about it this way, if I can give a visual, Michelle.
Definitely.
A denture or a partial is like having a walker or a wheelchair for the mouth, though.
Yeah.
And we all know that anybody who has the ability to ambulate, to walk around without the use of that type of device, embraces it and loves the idea of it.
It's freedom.
Yeah.
It's freedom.
Yeah.
And see, now you said freedom, Kevin.
Yeah.
Freedom is a priceless thing.
It really is.
Yeah. It's funny. A friend of my mother's, I remember he was in his 90s, and he said, if I had known I was going to be around this long when I was young, I would have taken care of my teeth differently because, you know, all these things that you're talking about were affecting him, and there was not much he could do to save, you know, what God had put in his mouth to begin with.
Right.
So,
for him now, science and technology, we place implants in and recreate what he lost.
Recreate what he lost. Well, this has been, as I said, an interesting and an educating
I feel like I have
show.
To go floss. I feel I don't want to show you my teeth.
No, exactly. you know, not only from a standpoint of the business aspects of dentistry and owning a practice, but just things that we can use every day that will help us from a health standpoint, and then, like you said, that emotional health of being able to smile and drink that in, have others drink that in.
Drink in that smile.
Drink in that smile. So tell our listeners again how they can find Dunson Dental.
Dunson Dental Design is located in the heart of Atlanta, Georgia, in Midtown Atlanta at 12th and Peachtree at 1100 Peachtree, Suite 680. Easy access to the information associated with Dunson Dental can be found at DunsonDental.com. And the number for my office is 404-897-1699.
And if people want to know a little bit more about oral cancer and sort of how that is evolving in the month of April, what are some ways that they can find out more information on that realm?
They can go to Dunson Dental Design, and there should be a link that will connect them to the oral cancer awareness. All right, so that's available to them there.
Great. Well, we appreciate you coming in. I'm going to end the show with the question that I ask all my guests who sit across from me. So think back to your 20-year-old self.
Okay.
Think back to that 20-year-old self. And if you could give your 20-year-old self some advice, given what you know today, what would you tell your 20-year-old self?
I would tell my 20-year-old self to that the willingness to succeed is nothing without the willingness to be prepared. So develop an attitude of drive that supports whatever your vision and your goals are, and go for it.
Great.
And in the process, be mindful of those who can help you, and always be thankful that you have an opportunity to stand on their shoulders to do whatever it is you choose to do.
Well, it has truly been a pleasure, Dr. Dunson, having you here and learning more about the field of dentistry as well as what you're doing in your practice. So join us next week at 10 o'clock on Fridays, where we talk about all things growth, because growth matters.